In this episode of After Hours, our head of strategy advisory, Kjell Herreman, caught up with Niklas Kozakovits, the chief innovation officer at Worldline, to dive into the fast-paced and exciting world of central bank digital currencies, looking at where they stand today and where they could be heading.
Hi, Nikola, it's fantastic to have you on here. So Nikola Kozakovits, you are the chief innovation officer at Worldline, and you've been heavily involved with the discussions around central bank digital currency.
Indeed.
Which is obviously moving quite a little bit. So we'd love to have a catch up with you and kind of get your views on CBDC, where we stand today and where we're heading soon. So maybe you can give a little bit of an introduction about how you've been involved with CBDC and where we stand today.
Yeah, sure. So actually I was approached by the ECB when they were creating the market advisory group, and they were looking for people with different profiles, with different backgrounds, who could bring different views and different ideas regarding what should be CBDC and also how to implement CBDC. So to be really honest, at the very beginning, when I started working with central bankers, and no pun intended, I thought that it would be like classical bankers, but with more, stiffer. And actually, no, they are really bright people. They really want to understand. They ask lots of questions. They listen a lot. And I can't even remember how many times during discussions I mentioned some things, some ideas, that then I found back into the actual documents and the actual deliverables from that group. So they're listening. And of course, when that suits them, they keep it. And when it doesn't suit them, they don't keep it. But they're really listening. So they're really trying to build something. So this is how I was involved. And I've been working with them for 18 months or something like that already.
Absolutely. Fantastic. And if we're looking at the ECB today, the European Central Bank, a lot of their focus has been around retail payments, obviously, which is quite interesting for Worldline, being one of the largest card processors and acquirers in Europe. A little bit less on the wholesale side. And one of the discussions we've had in the past and that I'm always interested in is, what is the point of a retail central bank digital currency? From my perspective, we have instant payments that are coming about. We have card payments integrated into the wallet. Great user experience. Customers don't pay for anything. So what's the point? What problem are we solving here?
So again, here I don't want to speak for the ECB or whatever, so I'm speaking for myself. But to me, the real reason is pretty simple. A state has to provide you with a currency. That currency allows you to make payments. And one of the roles of that currency is to allow citizens to pay in any environment, under any condition. It has to be working all the time. And it has to be free of access. Everybody should be able to access it and use it in any type of environment. Now, the thing is that today, when I go into internet and I'm on an e-commerce site, if I want to pay in euros, and when I'm in euros, I mean central euros, because commercial bank money is called euros, but these are not euros, they are equivalent euros. So if I want to pay in euros online today, I simply cannot. So to some extent, the central banks are failing to what they are doing because things have evolved extra. I'm not pointing fingers here. It's just a fact. You cannot do that. So at some point, they have to take the decision that they have to provide a means of payment that works physically and digitally, always responding to all the requirements or obligations, rules, duties that they have to provide to us citizens. So today, they're just simply doing what they're supposed to do. And that's the first and the main reason, in my opinion, for retail CBDC.
Absolutely. And from a philosophical standpoint, it absolutely makes sense.
From a legal regulatory standpoint.
Absolutely. On the other side, obviously at Red Compass Labs, we do a lot of implementations for clients. And if we're talking about a CBDC where the objective would be that the ECB provides a central infrastructure, but that most of the heavy lifting is done by the commercial banks and by the merchants as well, who would need to integrate this. We're talking about huge budgets aggregated across all these banks, across all these merchants. And obviously users need to be able to integrate it into their wallets as well. Is it worth spending what will likely be billions of euros for this philosophical reason?
I don't know. You're giving numbers, of course, that are pretty vague, but that are huge. And anyway, when you talk about 350 million people, it cannot cost 10,000 euros. We agree. Now, you have to do that per capita. So now I've no clue about how much it's going to cost. But don't forget, we're targeting 350 million users. So per capita, even if you have an investment of a few euros, you already have huge amounts. And the thing is that it has to be done. But how much does cash cost?
Yeah.
Cash is free to use, but it's not free to print. It's not free to distribute. It's not free to. So, and commercial banks are doing lots of that part as well. So everything is expensive. Now the question is, would a digital euro be more or less expensive? Because if it's less expensive and if it replaces, it's a gain. So again, we really have to take the big picture out of that and really understand what can be leveraged and what are the advantages of such a solution. Do we need such a solution? Personally, I think so. Not simply the regulatory standpoint, but I think that it's very important that the payment world evolves to a next step in the technological environment, just like we did before with online payments and real-time card payments, before it was simply with cards, before it was with checks, before. So there are like steps up, and I think that now we are at a step up moment, and we have to take that step, especially since before there weren't that many competition. So we the financial world had all the leisure we wanted to take that step when we were ready to. Now we're more forced to do it because there's competition, and that competition could definitely take a whole lot of the market, and that would not turn as good as it should.
Absolutely.
Be.
So it's interesting. My understanding is from the ECB that the idea would still be to maintain cash as well, and that the CBDC would not replace physical cash.
Partially, now, it would replace partially.
Partially.
The idea is that if you have that amount of cash, the idea is to split it, I don't know if it's 50-50 or whatever, but to keep a part of cash and turn a part of that cash into digital currencies.
But it seems like we're talking about and cash and card
payments, but you replace part
CBDC.
Of it.
That seems like a lot of different payment methods to manage on both payer and payer side. So another topic that's close to both our hearts, I think, interoperability. How does that work for merchants or for banks to be able to provide all these payment methods? And how can users make sense of what method to
use?
But
really, first, we really have to separate central money from commercial money. So central money, today it's cash. End of the story, pretty simple. Tomorrow it's going to be cash plus CBDC. CBDC will look like a smartphone or a smart card, and probably a QR code or an NFC beam. Okay. Now, when you look at commercial money, you have checks first, but less and less, but still, because it's always, like you said, and not replacing totally. So you still have that. You still have the cards, but the cards, credit cards or scheme cards, it's a smart card, right?
Yeah.
Same form factor, same usage, same thing. Then you have the wallets. It can be also a smart card and or an application, QR code, NFC. So at the end of the day, there are several flavors. But when you look at it from a user standpoint, there's going to be actually two UXs, cash UX or QR code / NFC UX. End of the story. Now, whether you actually pay with real euros or commercial euros, I would say, who really cares? But then the thing is, we'll have, of course, lots of different means, but facing for ease of acceptance and ease of usage, we will have to make them converge into one type of UX. I'm going to make a parallel with electric cars. At the beginning, electric cars, you had to recharge a certain brand on certain chargers, et cetera, et cetera. But at some point, you understand that user experience-wise, you have to have something common. or charging your phone or for headphones or things like that. So at some point, for interoperability reason, you will have one UX and different flavors. But the real question is, are those flavors so different? I'm not sure. I think that they're going to more and more go towards the same technological solutions, but with a different branding, with different flavors, with different pricing, with different logos, with different colors. But people like to have different things. I mean, why do we all buy the same phone and put a different shell case around it?
No, absolutely. But if the UX is going to be the same everywhere, right? So it doesn't matter whether I'm doing card payment, an instant payment, an Epi payment, CBDC payment. It's all kind of the same user experience. I personally would tend to stick to the payment method I've been using, that I know, that I've built a relationship with, that I trust.
You have built a trust, a relationship with your means of payment?
Yes, because it's something I'm familiar with. It's something
You're familiar with the usage?
I'm familiar with not only the usage, also with the brand. I trust the Bancontact brand. I trust my American Express brand. I know that I can do a chargeback if there's ever a problem with my payment. And I've used it hundreds of times in the past. So
is the services they're providing.
Oh, absolutely.
They're all the same UX. Whether you use your Bancontact, your Visa, your Maestro, your MasterCard, or your American Express, you're using the same plastic card, same form factor, even usually the same terminal. But you choose it voluntarily depending on the usage you want to do, because you have different services that are tagged to it. So here it's going to be the same thing. You will have several rails with the same UX, and you will just pick them depending on, do you want some cashback? Do you want to have some loyalty points? Do you have to have your return, free return package, or things like that? Then it's up to the financial world to be creative and use that technical layer to build up lots of added value services.
And what would incentivize me then to use a CBDC payment, where banks aren't necessarily incentivized like they are with card payments, where they have interchange, where merchants perhaps are incentivized? So does the incentive for CBDC payments need to come from merchants due to cheaper fees? Or how do you see that?
Again, it's always the same. The incentive that issuing banks have only comes from the fact that users are paying more at the merchant because the merchant is paying the fees. Yeah. So somehow it's me who's paying it. So whether I pay through the merchant or pay directly, it's still me paying. So here I'm just going to choose what I'm paying for. When I pick American Express, it's because I want to have those services linked to it. If a merchant picks American Express, it's because they want to be guaranteed that they're going to be paid, that they don't want to have any issue in that kind of thing. That's why lots of people are not taking American Express, because they are not interested in those services. So again, it's going to depend on the people, depend on the kind of services you are interested in. So again, we are in a world where the digital allows to have more customized or personalized services. Before is that you have this full service or that full service or no service. Now you can pick and choose. Look, now you can buy a car and decide later to have the warming seats. That was not possible before. So now you can really customize your services. So here you're going to do the same thing. You will have several rails. You will pick some rails. You will drop some rails, take some new rails, change the services linked to that. And going back to the digital euro. Digital euro is just one of those physical rails. One of the things that the ECB is pushing is that transaction programmability. So they say we are providing the bare service. And commercial banks or PSPs in general can create as many added value services they can on top of that bare rail. But we want to provide a bare rail that is efficient, low operating cost, very low cost, and so that you have the least, traction, and that you can be as creative as possible. On paper, I think it's pretty cool. I think it has really a big interest because, of course, when you are a huge bank like KBC, like Belfius, like ING, you have the means to do lots of things on your own. But there are lots of smaller banks that cannot do that maybe, or more difficultly, on their own because they're smaller. So here the the European Central Bank is providing something that is usable for everybody, those who want and those who maybe want less.
Perfect. So a lot of things to look forward to.
Yeah.
Now, what are the next steps? Obviously, the ECB is starting to take a clear position. We see that the European Parliament and Commission have some perhaps somewhat dissenting views on the digital euro. Where are we headed? How is that going to resolve itself?
I'm not, here to me, it's politics. It's politics. It's all about negotiation. When you want to buy something, the first, you never say, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with the price. Okay. Let's say, no. You say, what? have you seen the state of the thing? Of course. So it's politics. It's negotiation. Again, I don't want to really delve into that. I think that everybody's fully aware of what is at stake. I think everybody's fully aware of the importance of that. Of course, everybody has vested interest. That's the fact that Europe is an entity that is built up with a group of other entities that might have some different interests. But I'm pretty sure that overall we'll be able to find something that will be in the greater interest.
Fantastic. Very last question I'm going to ask you to look in the glass ball once more. When can I treat you to coffee paying with my central bank digital currency wallet?
So my understanding is that this autumn there's going to be a go-no-go gate. To me, it's going to be a go gate because it makes sense. And after that, there's going to be the development part. And at the end of the development part, there's going to be a pilot. Because, of course, it's not going to be put all over Eurozone like this. There's going to be some pilots. So if I was managing that, I would choose a Eurozone country that is dense enough, small enough, and digital enough to be a good candidate. So I may be choosing...
Estonia?
I may be choosing Belgium. Yep. Belgium could be a good candidate because Belgium has always been, in my opinion, pretty much forward on digital payments and payments in general. So to me, it could be a good place to start. There's other places, of course, but this one, why not? So maybe in 2 years from now, you'll be able to pay me a coffee in digital euros in Brussels, who knows?
I'm looking forward to it. It was great catching up with you here at the banking scene. And enjoy the rest of your conference. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing your speech about interoperability.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to After Hours by Red Compass Labs. If you've enjoyed this discussion and are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, please do follow us to be informed about new podcasts coming up. That's all for this episode. See you next time.